to draw the curtains. Before she could start changing into her nightie, which might make her feel vulnerable enough to call Daddy to deal with an intruder, I tossed a piece of gravel at her window. I heard it hit with a sharp little crack, but nothing happened. Nora had put the sound down to birds, wind, the house settling. I threw another, harder. Her lamp went out. The curtain twitched just a cautious inch. I flicked on my torch, pointed it straight at my face, and waved. When she had had time to recognize me, I put a finger to my lips and then beckoned. After a moment, Nora's lamp went on again. She pulled back a curtain and flapped a hand at me, but it could have meant anything. Go away or hang on. I beckoned again, more urgently, grinning reassuringly and hoping the torchlight wouldn't turn it into a Jack Nicholson leer. She pushed at her hair, getting frustrated. Then, resourceful like her sister, she leaned forward on the windowsill, breathed on the pane, and wrote with a finger, "Wait." She even did it backwards, fair play to her, to make it easy for me to read. I gave her the thumbs up, switched off the torch, and waited. Whatever the daily's bedtime routine involved, it was nearly midnight before the back door opened and Nora came half-running, half-tiptoeing down the garden. She'd thrown on a long wool coat over her skirt and jumper, and she was breathless, one hand pressed to her chest. "God, that door! I had to haul on it to get it open, and then it slammed back on me. Sounded like a car crash. Did you hear it? I nearly fainted." I grinned and moved over on the bench. "Didn't hear a sound. You're a born cat burglar. Have a seat." She stayed where she was, catching her breath, and watching me with quick-moving, wary eyes. "I can only stay a minute. I just came out to see, I don't know, how you're doing, if you're all right." "I'm better for seeing you." "You looked like you nearly had a heart attack there, though." That got a reluctant little smile. "I nearly did, yeah. I was sure my dad'd be down any second. I feel like I'm 16 and I climbed down the drainpipe." In the dark, winter-blue garden, with her face washed clean for the night and her hair tumbling, she looked barely older. I said, "Is that how you spent your wild youth, you little rebel, you?" "Me? God, no, not a chance, not with my da. I was a good girl. I missed out on all that stuff. I only heard about it from me mates." "In that case," I said, "you've got every right to all the catching up you can get. Try this while you're at it." I pulled out my cigarettes, flipped the packet open, and offered it to her with a flourish. "Cancer stick?" Nora gave it a doubtful look. "I don't smoke. And there's no reason you should start. Tonight doesn't count. Tonight, you're 16 and a bold little rebel. I only wish I'd brought a bottle of cheap cider." After a moment, I saw the corner of her mouth slowly curve up again. "Why not?" she said. And she dropped down beside me and took a smoke. "Good woman yourself." I leaned over and lit it for her, smiling into her eyes. She pulled too hard on it and collapsed into a coughing fit, with me fanning her and both of us stifling giggles and pointing at the house and shushing each other and snickering even harder. "Oh, my Jesus," Nora said, wiping her eyes when she could breathe again. "I'm not cut out for this." "Little puffs," I told her, "and don't bother inhaling. Remember, you're a teenager, so this isn't about the nicotine. It's all about looking cool. Watch the expert." I slouched down on the bench, James Dean style, slid a cigarette into the corner of my lip, lit it, and jutted my jaw out to blow smoke in a long stream. "There. See?" She was giggling again. "You look like a gangster." "That's the idea. If you want to go for the sophisticated starlet look, though, we can do that, too. Sit up straight." She did. "Cross your legs. Now, chin down, look at me sideways, purse up your lips and..." She took a puff, threw in an extravagant wrist flourish and blew smoke at the sky. "Beautiful," I said. "You are now officially the ice-coolest wild child on the block. Congratulations." Nora laughed and did it again. "I am, haven't I?" "Yep, like a duck to water. I always knew there was a bad girl in there." After a moment, she said, Did you and Rosie used to meet out here?
Nah,
I was too scared of your da. She nodded, examining the glowing tip of her smoke. I was thinking about you this evening.
Yeah? Why?
Rosie. And Kevin. Is that not why you came here, as well?
Yeah,
I said carefully.
More or less.
I figured if anyone knows what the last few days have been like...
I miss her, Francis. A lot.
I know you do, babe.
I know.
So do I.
I wouldn't have expected. Before, I only missed her once in a blue moon, when I had the baby and she wasn't there to come see him, or when Ma and Dad got on my nerves and I'd have loved to ring Rosie and give out about them. The rest of the time, I barely thought about her, not anymore. I'd other things to be thinking about. But when we found out she was dead, I couldn't stop crying.
I'm not the crying type, I said.
But I know what you mean.
Nora tapped ash, aiming it into the gravel where Daddy might not spot it in the morning. She said, with painful, jagged edges on her voice,
My husband doesn't. He can't understand what I'm upset about. 20 years since I saw her, and I'm in bits.
He said for me to pull myself together, before I upset the Baba. My ma's on Valium. My dad thinks I should be looking after her. She's the one lost a child.
I kept thinking about you. I thought you were the only person who maybe wouldn't think I was being stupid.
I said, I'd seen Kevin for a few hours out of the last 22 years, and it still hurts like hell. I don't think you're being stupid at all.
I feel like I'm not the same person anymore. Do you know what I mean? All my life, when people asked, had I any brothers or sisters, I said, yeah, I've a big sister. Now I'll be saying, no, it's just me. Like as if I was an only child.
There's nothing to stop you telling people about her anyway.
Nora shook her head so hard that her hair whipped her face. No, I'm not going to lie about that. That's the worst part. I was lying all along and I didn't even know it. Whenever I told people I had a sister, it wasn't true. I was already an only child all that time.
I thought of Rosie, in O'Neill's, digging in her heels at the thought of pretending we were married. No way, I'm not faking that. It's not about what people think. I said gently, I don't mean lie. I just mean she doesn't have to vanish. I had a big sister, you can say. Her name was Rosie. She died. Nora shivered, suddenly and violently. I said, cold? She shook her head and ground out her cigarette on a stone.
I'm grand, thanks.
Here, give me that, I said, taking the butt off her and tucking it back into my packet. No good rebel leaves behind evidence of her teenage kicks for her dad to find.
It doesn't matter. I don't know what I was getting all worked up about. It's not like he can ground me. I'm a grown woman. If I want to leave the house, I can.
She wasn't looking at me anymore. I was losing her. Another minute and she would remember that she was, in fact, a respectable 30-something, with a husband and a kid, and a certain amount of good sense, and that none of the above were compatible with smoking in the back garden at midnight with a strange man. It's parent voodoo, I said, putting a wry grin on it. 2 minutes with them and you're straight back to being a kid. My ma still puts the fear of God into me, although, mind you, she actually would give me a clatter with a wooden spoon, grown man or no. Not a bother on her. After a second, Nora laughed, a reluctant little breath. I wouldn't put it past my dad to try grounding me. And you'd yell at him to stop treating you like a child, same as you did when you were 16. Like I said, parent voodoo. This time the laugh was a proper one, and she relaxed back onto the bench. And someday we'll do the same to our own kids. I didn't want her thinking about her kid.
Speaking of your father, I said, I want to apologize for the way my da acted the other night.
Nora shrugged. There was the two of them in it.
Did you see what started them off?
I was chatting away with Jackie and missed all the good part. One second everything was grand, the next the two of them were setting up for the fight scene from Rocky. Nora adjusted her coat, tucking the heavy collar tighter around her throat. She said, "I didn't see it either."
"But you've an idea what it was about,
don't you?"
"Men with a few drinks on them, you know yourself."
And they were both after having a tough few days. Anything could have got them going.
I said, with a harsh, sore scrape to it, "Nora, it took me half an hour just to get my da calmed down. Sooner or later, if this keeps going on, it'll give him a heart attack. I don't know if the bad blood between them is my fault, if it's because I went out with Rosie and your da wasn't happy about it. But if that's the problem, I'd at least like to know, so I can do something about it before it kills my father."
"God, Francis, don't be saying that. No way is it your fault."
She was wide-eyed, fingers wrapped around my arm. I had hit the right mix of guilt-tripped and guilt-tripper.
"Honest to God, it's not. The two of them never got on. Even back when I was a little young one, way before you ever went out with Rosie, my dad never..."
She dropped the sentence like a hot coal, and her hand came off my arm. I said, "He never had a good word to say about Jimmy Mackey. Is that what you were going to say?"
Nora said, "The other night, that wasn't your fault. That's all I was saying."
"Then whose bloody fault was it?"
"I'm lost here, Nora. I'm in the dark, and I'm drowning, and nobody will lift one finger to help me out. Rosie's gone. Kevin's gone. Half the place thinks I'm a murderer. I feel like I'm losing my mind. I came to you because I thought you were the one person who would have some clue what I'm going through. I'm begging you, Nora. Tell me what the hell is going on."
I can multitask. The fact that I was aiming to push her buttons didn't stop me from meaning just about every word.
Nora watched me. In the near dark, her eyes were enormous and troubled. She said, "I didn't see what started the two of them off, Francis. If I had to guess, but I'd say it was that your da was talking to my ma."
And there it was. Just that quickly, like gears interlocking and starting to move, dozens of little things going back to my childhood spun and whirred and clicked neatly into place. I'd thought up 100 possible explanations, each one more involved and unlikely than the last. Matt Daly ratting out one of my dad's less legal activities. Some hereditary feud going back to who stole whose last potato during the famine. But I had never thought of the one thing that starts practically every fight between two men, especially the truly vicious ones. A woman. I said, "The two of them had a thing together." I saw her lashes flutter, quick and embarrassed. It was too dark to tell, but I would have bet she was blushing.
"I think so, yeah. No one's ever said it to me straight out, but I'm almost sure."
"When?"
"Ah, ages ago, before they were married. It wasn't an affair, nothing like that. Just kids' stuff."
Which, as I knew better than most people, never stopped anything from mattering. "And then what happened?" I waited for Nora to describe unspeakable acts of violence, probably involving strangulation, but she shook her head.
"I don't know, Francis. I don't. Like I said, nobody ever talked to me about it. I just figured it out on my own, from bits and bobs."
I leaned over and jammed out my smoke on the gravel, shoved it back in the packet. "Now this," I said, "I didn't see coming. Colour me stupid."
"Why?"
"I wouldn't have thought you'd care."
"You mean, why do I care about anything that happened around here, when I couldn't be arsed coming back for 20-odd years?"
She was still gazing at me, worried and bewildered. The moon had come out. In the cold half-light, the garden looked pristine and unreal, like some symmetrical suburban limbo. I said, "Nora, tell me something. Do you think I'm a murderer?" It scared me shitless how badly I wanted her to say no. That was when I knew I should get up and leave. I already had everything she could give me. Every extra second was a bad idea. Nora said simply and matter-of-factly,
"No, I never did."
Something twisted inside me. I said, "Apparently a lot of people do." She shook her head. Once, when I was just a wee little young one, 5 or 6 maybe, I had one of Sally Hearn's cat's kittens out in the street to play with, and a bunch of big fellas came along and took it away to tease me. They were throwing it back and forth, and I was screaming. Then you came and made them stop. Got the kitten for me, told me to take it back to Hearn's. You wouldn't remember.
I do, yeah, I said.
The wordless plea in her eyes. She needed the two of us to share that memory, and of all the things she needed, that was the only tiny one I could give.
Of course I remember.
Someone who'd do that, I can't see him hurting anyone. Not on purpose. Maybe I'm just stupid.
That twist again, more painful.
Not stupid, I said.
Just sweet. The sweetest thing.
In that light, she looked like a girl, like a ghost. She looked like a breathtaking black-and-white Rosie escaped for one thin slice of time from a flickering old film or a dream. I knew if I touched her, she would vanish, turn back into Nora in the blink of an eye, and be gone for good. The smile on her lips could have pulled my heart out of my chest. I touched her hair only, with the tips of my fingers. Her breath was quick and warm against the inside of my wrist.
"Where have you been?"
I said softly, close to her mouth.
"Where have you been all this time?"
We clutched at each other like wild lost kids, on fire and desperate. My hands knew the soft, hot curves of her hips by heart. The shape rose up to meet me from some fathoms-deep place in my mind that I had thought was lost forever. I don't know who she was looking for. She kissed me hard enough that I tasted blood. She smelled like vanilla. Rosie used to smell of lemon drops and sun and the airy solvent they used in the factory to clean stains off the cloth. I dug my fingers deep into Nora's rich curls and felt her breasts heave against my chest so that for a second I thought she was crying. She was the one who broke away. She was crimson-cheeked and breathing hard, pulling down her jumper. She said, "I've to go in now." I said, "Stay," and took hold of her again. For a second, I swear she thought about it. Then she shook her head and detached my hands from her waist. She said, "I'm glad you came tonight."
Rosie would have stayed.
I almost said it. I would have, if I thought there was a chance it would do me any good. Instead, I leaned back on the bench, took a deep breath, and felt my heart start to slow down. Then I turned Nora's hand over and kissed her palm.
"So am I," I said. "Thank you for coming out to me. Now go inside before you have me driven mad. Sweet dreams."
Her hair was tumbled and her lips were full and tender from kissing. She said, "Safe home, Francis." Then she stood up and walked back up the garden, pulling her coat around her. She slipped into the house and closed the door behind her without once looking back. I sat there on the bench, watching her silhouette move in the lamplight behind her bedroom curtain, till my knees stopped shaking, and I could climb over the walls and head for home. Chapter 17. The answering machine had a message from Jackie, asking me to give her a ring. "Nothing important now, just, you know yourself. Bye." She sounded drained and older than I had ever heard her. I was wrecked enough myself that a part of me was actually scared to leave it overnight, given what had happened when I ignored Kevin's messages. But it was some ungodly hour of the morning. The phone would have given her and Gavin matching heart attacks. I went to bed. When I pulled off my jumper, I could still smell Nora's hair on the collar. Wednesday morning, I woke up late, around 10, feeling several notches more exhausted than I had the night before. It had been a few years since I'd been in top-level pain, mental or physical. I'd forgotten just how much it takes out of you. I stripped off a layer or two of brain fluff with cold water and black coffee, and phoned Jackie.
"Ah, how are you, Francis?"
Her voice still had that dulled note, even heavier. Even if I'd had the time or the energy to tackle her about Holly, I wouldn't have had the heart. How are you, Honeybunch? I just got your message.
Oh, yeah. I thought afterwards maybe I shouldn't have. I didn't want to give you a fright, like. Maybe you think anything else had happened. I just wanted, I don't know, to see how you're getting on.
I said, I know I headed off early Monday night. I should have stuck around.
Maybe, yeah. Sure, it's done now. There was no more drama anyway. Everyone had more drink. Everyone sang a while longer. Everyone went home.
There was a thick layer of background noise going on. Chit-chat, girls aloud, and a hairdryer. I said, are you at work?
Ah, sure. Why not? Gav couldn't take another day off, and I didn't fancy hanging around the flat on my own. Anyway, if you and Shay are right about the state of the country, I'd better keep my regulars happy, what?
It was meant as a joke, but she didn't have the energy to put a bounce on it. Don't push yourself, sweetheart. If you're wrecked, go home. I'd say your regulars wouldn't leave you for love or money.
You never know, do you?
Ah, no. I'm grand. Everyone's being lovely. They're bringing me cups of tea and letting me have a smoke break whenever I need one. I'm better off here.
Where are you? Are you not in work?
Taking a few days off.
That's good, Francis. You work too hard, sure. Do something nice for yourself. Bring Holly somewhere.
I said, actually, while I've got the free time, I'd love a chance to have a chat with Ma. On her own, without Da around. Is there a good time of the day for that? Like, does he go out to the shops or to the pub?
Most days he does, yeah, but...
I could hear the effort she was putting in to try to focus.
He was having a terrible time with his back yesterday. Today as well, I'd say. He could hardly get out of the bed. When his back does be at him, he mostly just has a sleep.
Translation. Some doctor gave him the good pills. Da topped up with floorboard vodka. He was out for the foreseeable.
Mammy'll be there all day, till Shay gets home anyway, in case he needs anything. Call over to her. She'll be delighted to see you.
I said, I'll do that. You tell that Gav to take good care of you, okay?
He's been brilliant, so he has. I don't know what I'd do without him. Come here. Do you want to call around to us this evening? Have a bit of a dinner with us, maybe.
Fish and chips with pity sauce sounded tasty. I've got plans, I said. Well, thanks, hon. Maybe some other time. You'd better get back to work before someone's highlights turn green. Jackie tried obligingly to laugh, but it fell flat.
Yeah, I probably had. Mind yourself, Francis. Say how you to Mammy for me.
And she was gone, back into the fog of hairdryer noise and chatter and cups of sweet tea. Jackie was right. When I rang the buzzer, Ma came down to the hall door. She looked exhausted, too, and she had lost weight since Saturday. At least one belly was missing. She eyed me for a moment, deciding which way to go. Then she snapped,
"Your dad's asleep. Come on into the kitchen and don't be making noise."
She turned around and stumped painfully back up the stairs. Her hair needed setting. The flat stank of spilled booze, air freshener and silver polish. The Kevin shrine was even more depressing by daylight. The flowers were half dead, the mass cards had fallen over, and the electric candles were starting to fade and flicker. Faint, satisfied snores were trickling through the bedroom door. Ma had every bit of silver she owned spread out on the kitchen table. Cutlery, brooches, photo frames. Mysterious, pseudo-ornamental tat that had clearly spent a long time on the re-gift merry-go-round before falling off here. I thought of Holly, puffy with tears and rubbing furiously away at her dollhouse furniture.
"Here," I said, picking up the polishing cloth. "I'll give you a hand. You'll only make a bags of it, the great clumsy hands on you. Let me have a go. You can tell me where I'm going wrong."
Ma shot me a suspicious look, but that offer was too good to pass up.
"Might as well make yourself useful, I suppose. You'll have a cup of tea."
It wasn't a question. I pulled up a chair and got started on the cutlery, while Ma bustled in cupboards. The conversation I wanted would have worked best as a confidential mother and daughter chat,
Since I didn't have the equipment for that, a little joint housework would at least steer us towards the right vibe. If she hadn't been doing the silver, I would have found something else to clean. Ma said, by way of opening salvo, "You went off very sudden Monday night?"
"I had to go."
"Have you been getting on?"
"How do you expect? If you wanted to know, you'd have been here."
"I can't imagine what this has been like for you," I said, which may be part of the formula, but it was probably true. "Is there anything I can do?" She threw tea bags into the pot.
"We're grand, thanks very much. The neighbours have been great. Brought us enough dinners for a fortnight, and Marie Dwyer's letting me keep them in her chest freezer. We've lived without your help this long, we'll survive a bit longer."
"I know, Mammy. If you think of anything, though, you just let me know, okay? Anything at all." Ma spun round and pointed the teapot at me.
"I'll tell you what you can do. You can get hold of your friend, him, what's his name with the jaw. You can tell him to send your brother home. I can't get on to the funeral home about the arrangements. I can't go to Father Vincent about the mass. I can't tell anyone when I'll be burying my own son, because some young fella with a face like Popeye on him won't tell me when he'll be releasing the body. That's what he called it, the brass neck of him. Like our Kevin's his property."
"I know," I said, "and I promise you I'll do my best. But he's not trying to make your life any more difficult. He's just doing his job as fast as he can.
His job's his problem, not mine. If he keeps us waiting any longer, it'll have to be a closed casket. Did you think of that?"
I could have told her the casket would probably have to be closed anyway, but we had already taken this line of conversation about as far as I felt like going. I said,
"I hear you've met Holly."
A lesser woman would have looked guilty, even just a flicker, but not my ma. Her chin's shot out.
"And about time. That child would have been married and given me great-grandchildren before you'd have lifted a finger to bring her here. Were you hoping if you waited long enough, I'd die before you had to introduce us?"
The thought had crossed my mind. "She's pretty fond of you," I said. "What do you think of her?"
"The image of her, Mammy. Lovely girls, the pair of them. Better than you deserve."
"You've met Olivia." I tipped my hat to Liv mentally. She had skated around that one very prettily.
"Twice only. She dropped Holly and Jackie down to us. Was the Liberty's girl not good enough for you?"
"You know me, Ma. Always getting above myself."
"And look where that got you. Are the two of yous divorced now, or are yous only separated?"
"Divorced. Couple of years back."
"Hmph."
Ma's mouth pursed up tight.
"I never divorced your da."
Which was unanswerable on so many levels.
"True enough," I said. "Now you can't take communion."
I knew better than to rise to that, but no one can get you quite like family.
"Ma,
even if I wanted to take communion, and I don't, the divorce wouldn't be a problem. I can divorce myself into a coma for all the church cares, as long as I don't shag anyone who's not Olivia. The problem would be the lovely ladies I've ridden since the divorce."
"Don't be dirty," Ma snapped. "Not a smart ass like you. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I know this much. Father Vincent wouldn't give you communion. In the church where you were baptized."
She jabbed a triumphant finger at me. Apparently this counted as a win. I reminded myself that I needed a chat more than I needed the last word. I said meekly, "You're probably right."
"I am, of course."
"At least I'm not raising Holly to be a heathen, too. She goes to Mass." I thought the mention of Holly would smooth Ma down again, but this time it just put her back up further. You never can tell.
"She might as well be a heathen, for all the good it's done me. I missed her first communion, my first granddaughter."
"Ma, she's your third granddaughter. Carmel's got two girls older than her.
The first one with her name, and the last by the looks of it.
I don't know what Shay's playing at all. He could have a dozen girls on the go and we'd never know. He's never brought one to meet us in his life. I swear to God, I'm ready to give up on him altogether.
Your dad and myself thought Kevin would be the one who..."
She bit down on her lips and upped the volume on the tea-making clatter, bashing cups onto saucers and biscuits onto a plate. After a while, she said,
"And now, I suppose that's the last we'll see of Holly?"
"Here," I said, holding up a fork. "Is that clean enough? Ma threw it half a glance. It is not. Get between the prongs.
She brought the tea things over to the table, poured me a cup and pushed milk and sugar towards me. She said,
I'm after buying Holly her Christmas presents. Lovely little velvet dress I got her.
That's a couple of weeks away, I said.
Let's see how we go.
Ma gave me a sideways look that told me nothing, but she left it. She found another cloth, sat down opposite me, and picked up something silver that could have been a bottle stopper.
Drink that tea, she said.
The tea was strong enough to reach out of the pot and give you a punch. Everyone was out at work, and the street was very quiet. Just the soft, even pattering of the rain, and the far-off rush of traffic. Ma worked her way through various undefined silver widgets. I finished the cutlery and moved on to a photo frame. It was covered in fancy flowers that I would never get clean to Ma's standards, but at least I knew what it was. When the room felt like it had settled enough, I said,
Tell me something. Is it true Da was doing a line with Teresa Daly before you came on the scene?
Ma's head snapped up and she stared at me. Her face didn't change, but an awful lot of things were zipping across her eyes.
Where'd you hear that? She demanded.
Sorry he was with her.
Your dad's a feckin' idiot. You knew that already, or you're as bad.
I did, yeah. I just didn't know that was one of the specific ways he was a feckin' idiot.
She was always troubled, that one. Always drawing attention to herself, wiggling down the road, screaming, and carrying on with her friends.
And Da fell for it.
They all fell for it. The fellas are stupid. They go mad for all that. Your Da and Matt Daly and half the fellas in the Liberties, all hanging out of Tessie O'Byrne's arse. She lapped it up. Kept three or four of them dangling at once. Broke it off with them every other week when they weren't giving her enough attention. They just came crawling back for more.
We don't know what's good for us, I said, especially when we're young. Da would have been only a young fella back then, wouldn't he?
Ma sniffed. Old enough to know better. I was 3 years younger, sure, and I could have told him it would end in tears.
I said, You'd already spotted him, yeah?
I had, yeah. God, yeah. You wouldn't think.
Her fingers had slowed on the widget.
You wouldn't think it now. But he was only gorgeous your dad was back then. A load of curly hair on him, and those blue eyes, and the laugh. He'd a great laugh.
We both glanced involuntarily out the kitchen door, towards the bedroom. Ma said, and you could still hear, that the name used to taste like super fancy ice cream in her mouth.
Jimmy Mackey could have had his pick of any girl around.
I gave her a little smile. And he didn't go straight for you.
I was a child, sure. I was 15 when he started chasing after Tessie O'Byrne. And I wasn't like these young ones nowadays that look 20 before they're 12. I'd no figure on me, no makeup. I hadn't a clue. I used to try and catch his eye when I'd see him on my way to work in the morning, but he'd never look twice. He was mad on Tessie, and she liked him best of the lot.
I had never heard any of this before. And I was willing to bet that Jackie hadn't either, or she would have passed it on. Ma isn't the let's all share our feelings type. If I'd asked her about this story a week earlier or later, I would have got nowhere. Kevin had left her fractured and peeled raw. You use what you've got. So, why did they break up? I asked.
Ma's mouth pursed up. If you want to do that, Silver, do it properly. Get into the cracks. There's no point if I'll have to do the lot again after you.
I said, Sorry, and upped the display of elbow grease. After a moment she said,
I'm not saying your dad was a wholly innocent. Tessie O'Byrne never had a bit of shame, but there was the pair of them in it.
I waited, rubbing away. Ma caught my wrist and pulled it towards her to check the shine on the frame. Then she gave a grudging little nod and let go.
That's better. Things weren't the same back then. We had a bit of decency about us. We weren't riding all around just because that's what they did on the telly.
I inquired, Da rode Tessie O'Byrne on the telly? That got me a clout on the arm.
No, I'm not telling you, if you'll only listen to me. They were always wild, the pair of them. Made each other worse. One day, in summer, Your dad borrowed a car off a friend of his, and drove Tessie down to Powers Court on a Sunday afternoon to see the waterfall. Only the car broke down on the way back.
Or that had been Dad's story.
Ma was giving me a meaningful look.
And? I said.
And they stayed there. Overnight. We'd no mobile phones back then. They couldn't ring for a mechanic, or even let anyone know what was happening. They tried walking for a bit, but they were out in a lane in the middle of Wicklowshire, and it was getting dark. They stayed in the car, and the next morning they got a jump start off a farmer going past. By the time they got home, everyone thought they were after eloping.
She tilted the silver widget to the light to check that the finish was perfect and to stretch the pause. Ma always did have a taste for drama.
Well, your da always said to me, he slept in the front seat and Tessie slept in the back. I wouldn't know, sure. But that's not what the place thought.
I said, I bet it wasn't.
Girls didn't stay out with fellas back then. Only slappers did that. I'd never known a girl who did the bold thing before she was married.
I'd have thought the two of them would have had to get married after that, to preserve her reputation. Ma's face closed over. She said, with a sniff in her voice,
I'd say your da would have done it. He was that mental about her, the feckin' Egypt. But he wasn't good enough for the O'Byrnes. They always did have notions of themselves. Tessie's da and her uncles bet the livin' shite out of him. I saw him the day after. I hardly recognised him. They told him not to be going near her again. Said he'd done enough damage.
I said, and he did what he was told. I liked that, a lot. It felt reassuring. Matt Daly and his buddies could have beaten me to within an inch of my life, and the second I got out of the hospital, I would have headed for Rosie as fast as I could limp. Ma said, prim and satisfied, he hadn't got much choice.
Tessie's da had always let her away with murder, so he had, and look where that got him. But after that, he'd hardly let her go out the door, only to go to work, and he walked her there himself. I wouldn't blame him. Everyone was talking about it. The little gurriers were calling things after her on the street. All the owl ones were waiting for her to turn up in trouble. Half her friends weren't allowed to speak to her, in case she turned them into whores as well. Father Hanratty gave a homily about loose women weakening the country, and that wasn't what the men died for in 1916. No names, mind you, but everyone knew who he meant. That put a stop to Tessie's gallop.
Straight across almost half a century, I could feel the feeding frenzy, the whirling hysteria of it, the double-speed pump of adrenaline as the place smelled blood and went into attack mode. Those weeks had quite probably sown the crazy seeds in Tessie Daly's mind. It'd do that, all right, I said.
And serve her right. Taught her what was what. She liked messing about with the fellas, but she didn't want the name for it, did she?
Ma was sitting up straight, with her virtuous face on her.
She started going with Matt Daly straight after. He'd been making goo-goo eyes at her for years, but she'd never paid him any notice. Not till he came in useful. He was a decent fella, Matt was. Tessie's dad didn't mind her going with him. It was the only way she was allowed out the door.
I said, and that's what Da has against Matt Daly. He nicked his girl.
That was most of it. Sure, they never liked each other to start with.
She lined up the silver gizmo with three more like it, flicked a minute speck of something off the side, picked out a twee little Christmas tree ornament from the to-do pile.
Matt was always jealous of your da. Your da was a million miles better looking than Matt, so he was, and he was popular. Not just with the girls. The fellas thought he was great as well, a great laugh. Matt was a boring little bollocks. No go on him.
Her voice was layered with old things, triumph and bitterness and spite twisted together. I said, so when Matt was the one who got the girl, he rubbed it in.
That wasn't enough for him. Your dad was after applying to Guinness's as a driver. He'd been told the job was as good as his as soon as the next driver retired. But Matt Daly'd been working there a few years, and his dad before him. He knew people. After all that with Tessie, Matt went to his foreman and told him Jimmy Mackey wasn't the kind of fella they wanted at Guinness's. There were 20 lads applying for every job, They didn't need anyone that might bring trouble.
So Da ended up doing the plastering. No humour intended.
That was my Uncle Joe got him the apprenticeship. We got engaged not long after that whole carry-on with Tessie. Your Da needed a trade if we were going to be having a family.
I said, you were a fast worker.
I saw my chance and I took it. I was 17 by then, old enough to make the boys look. Your Da was...
Ma's lips vanished, and she twisted her cloth tighter into the crannies of the ornament.
I knew he was still mad into Tessie, she said after a moment,
and there was a defiant spark in her voice that gave me a hair's breadth glimpse of a girl with her chin out, watching wild Jimmy Mackey from this kitchen window, and thinking, mine.
But I didn't mind that. I thought I'd change that once I got my hands on him. I never wanted a lot. I wasn't one of those ones that think they'll be film stars in Hollywood. I never had notions. All I wanted was a little house of my own and a few childer, and Jimmy Mackey.
Well, I said, you got the kids, and you got the man.
I got him in the end, all right. What Tessie and Matt left of him.
He'd started on the drink by then. But you wanted him anyway. I kept my voice nice and non-judgmental.
I'd my heart set on him. My mammy, God rest her soul, she warned me, never go with a drinking man. But I hadn't a clue. My own Da, you won't remember him, Francis, but he was a lovely man. He never touched a drop. I hadn't a notion what a drinker was like. I knew Jimmy'd have a few, but sure all the fellas would. I thought it was no more than that. And it wasn't, not when I first spotted him. Not till Tessie O'Byrne wrecked his head for him.
I believed her. I know what the right woman at the right moment can do to a man. Not that Tessie seemed to have got away scot-free herself. Some people should never meet. The fallout spreads too wide and gets into the ground for much too long. Ma said,
everyone had always said Jimmy Mackey'd be a good for nothing. His Ma and Da were a pair of owl alcos, never worked a day in their lives. Ever since he was only a little chiseler, he'd been going around the neighbours asking could he stay for the dinner because there was nothing at home. He'd be out running the streets in the middle of the night. By the time I knew him, everyone said for definite he'd wind up a waster like his Ma and Da.
Her eyes had strayed off the polishing, away towards the window and the falling rain.
I knew they were wrong, but... he wasn't bad, Jimmy wasn't, just wild. And he wasn't thick. He could have been something. He didn't need Guinnesses. He could have had his own little business. There was no need for him to be answering to bosses every day. He hated that. He always loved the driving. He could have done deliveries, had his own van. If your woman hadn't got to him first.
And there was the motive. Gift wrapped and tied with ribbon, to go ever so perfectly with that signature MO. One day, Jimmy Mackey had had a top-flight girl on his arm and a top-flight job in the bag. He'd been all ready to paint the future in his colours and give the finger to the bastards who'd said he'd never do it. Then he made one slip-up, just one, and prissy little Matt Daly waltzed in cool as a cucumber and pocketed Jimmy's whole life for himself. By the time Jimmy's head cleared, he was married to a girl he never wanted, scrambling for the odd day's work on a job with no prospects, and drinking enough to kill Peter O'Toole. He spent 20-odd years watching his lost life unfold right across the road in another man's home. Then, all in one weekend, Matt Daly humiliated him in front of the whole street and almost got him arrested. In what passes for an alcoholic's brain, it's always someone else's doing. And he somehow found out that Rosie Daly was wrapping his son around her finger and dancing him off to wherever suited her. And there could have been more to it than that. More and worse. Da grinning at me, winking, daring me to talk back. The Daly young one, yeah? She's a daisy. The kegs in her, my Jesus. My girl Rosie. The sweet, spitting image of his Tessie O'Byrne. He must have heard me, after all, tiptoeing through the front room. Sure, I was untouchable. I'd seen him pretend to be asleep 100 times.
Maybe he'd only meant to tell her to get her hands off his family. Maybe he had wanted something more. But then, there she was, in front of him, slapping him in the face with just how little it mattered what he wanted. Tessie O'Byrne's daughter, irresistible and untouchable all over again. Matt Daly's daughter, taking away whatever Jimmy had that she fancied. Probably he was drunk, at least until he realized what had happened. He had been a strong man back then. We hadn't been the only ones awake that night. Somewhere in there, Kevin had got up, maybe to go out to the Jacks, and found the both of us gone. At the time, it meant nothing to him. Da regularly vanished for days on end. Shay and I both had the occasional nighttime errand of one kind or another. But this weekend, when he realized that someone had been out killing Rosie that night, Kevin had remembered. I felt like I had known every detail of this story, in some chasm in the deepest part of my brain, since the second I heard Jackie's voice on the answering machine. It felt like icy black water filling up my lungs. Ma said, "He should have waited for me to grow up." She was pretty enough, Tessie was, but by the time I got to 16, there was plenty of fellas thought I was pretty as well. I know I was young, but I was growing. If he'd just taken his great, stupid eyes off her long enough to notice me for 1 minute, none of this would have happened. The solid weight of grief in her voice could have sunk ships. That was when I realized that she thought Kevin had been drunk out of his skull, just like he learned from Daddy, and that was what had sent him out of that window. Before I could pull myself together enough to set her straight, Ma swiped her fingers across her mouth, looked at the clock on the windowsill, and let out a screech. "Holy God, will you look at that? It's gone 1 o'clock. I have to eat something, or I'll be getting a weakness." She shoved the ornament away from her and pushed back her chair. "You'll have a sandwich." I said, "Will I bring one into Da?" For one more second, Ma's face turned towards the bedroom door. Then she said, "Leave him," and went back to pulling things out of the fridge. The sandwiches were soft butter and reconstituted ham on white sliced pan, cut into triangles. They took me straight back to when my feet didn't touch the floor at that same table. Ma made another pot of ferocious tea and ate her way methodically through her triangles. The way she chewed said she'd got better dentures somewhere along the way. When we were kids, she always told us her missing teeth were our fault. She had lost them having us, a tooth for every child. When the tears started coming, she put down her mug, pulled a faded blue handkerchief out of her cardigan pocket, and waited for them to stop. Then she blew her nose and went back to her sandwich. Chapter 18. A part of me would have sat there with my Ma forever, giving the teapot a reheat every hour or so, and making the occasional batch of sandwiches. Ma wasn't bad company, as long as she kept her mouth shut. And for the first time her kitchen felt like shelter, at least compared to what was waiting for me outside. As soon as I stepped through that door, the only thing left for me to do was to go after solid proof. That wasn't the hard part. I figured it should take me about 24 hours, max. That was where the full-on nightmare kicked in. Once I had proof, I would have to figure out what to do with it. Around 2 o'clock, noises started up in the bedroom. Bed springs creaking, a wordless throat-clearing shout, that endless, retching, full-body cough. I figured that was my cue to leave, which triggered a volley of complicated Christmas dinner questions from Ma. "If yourself and Holly both came, I'm only saying if, would she eat white meat or dark meat, or would she have any at all, because she said to me her mammy doesn't give her turkey unless it does be that free-range one?" I kept my head down and kept moving. As I dived out the door, she called after me, "Lovely seeing you. Come back soon." Behind her, Da shouted through phlegm, "Josie!" I even knew exactly how we could have found out where Rosie was going to be that night. The only way to that info I'd been through Imelda, and I could only think of one reason why my Da would be anywhere near her. Here I had always taken it for granted that when he vanished for a day or three, it was booze he was hunting. Even after everything else he had done, it had never once occurred to me that he would cheat on my Ma. If I had thought about it, I would have figured he had an alcohol-related inability to do any such thing. My family is just chock-full of surprises. Imelda could have told her Ma outright what Rosie had told her. Girly bonding, looking for attention, who knew? Or she could have dropped a hint when my Da was around, just a little one to make her feel smarter than the man who was fucking her mother. Like I said, my Da is no idiot. He would have put two and two together. This time, when I rang Imelda's buzzer, no one answered. I stepped back and watched her window. Something moved behind the net curtain. I leaned on the buzzer for a good 3 minutes before she snatched up the handset. What? How are you, Imelda? It's Francis. Surprise. Fuck off. Ah, now, Imelda, be nice. We need to talk. I've got nothing to say to you. Tough. I've got nowhere else to be, so I'll be waiting across the road in my car for as long as this takes. It's the silver 1999 Merc. When you get bored of this game, come down to me, we'll have a quick chat and then I'll leave you alone for life. If I get bored first, I'm going to start asking your neighbours questions about you. Have you got that? Fuck off! She hung up. Imelda had plenty of stubborn in the tank. I figured it would take at least 2 hours, maybe three, before she cracked and came down to me. I headed back to my car, turned on Otis Redding, and opened the window to share with the neighbours. It was a toss-up whether they would peg me as a cop, a drug dealer, or a moneylender's goon. None of the above would go down well. At that hour, Hallows Lane was quiet. An owl fell on a walker, and an owl one polishing a brasswork had a long disapproving conversation about me, and a couple of yummy mummies gave me sideways looks on the way back from shopping. A guy with a shiny tracksuit and a large number of problems spent a solid 40 minutes outside Imelda's house, swaying back and forth and using all his remaining brain cells to shout, "Deco!" up at the top window at 10-second intervals. But Deco had better things to do, and eventually the guy staggered off. Around 3 o'clock, someone who was clearly Shania hauled herself up the steps of number 10 and let herself in. Isabel got home not long after. She was the living spit of Imelda in the 80s, right down to the defiant angle of her chin and the long-legged screw-you walk. I couldn't work out whether she made me sad or gave me hope. Every time the dirty lace curtains twitched, I waved. A little after 4, when it was getting dark, and Genevieve had come home from school, and I had moved on to James Brown, a knuckle tapped on my passenger window. It was Scorcher. "I'm not supposed to be near this case," I told Imelda. "I've put my job on the line just by coming here." I wasn't sure whether to despise her for squealing or admire her resourcefulness. I turned off the music and rolled down the window. "Detective, what can I do for you?" "Open the door, Frank." I raised my eyebrows, doing surprised at the grim tone, but I leaned over and unlocked the door. Scorcher got in and slammed it hard. "Now drive," he said. "Are you on the run? You can hide in the boot if you want." "I'm not in the mood for funnies. I'm getting you out of here before you intimidate those poor girls any more than you already have." "I'm just a man in his car, Scorch. Sitting here, having a nostalgic look at the old home turf. What's so intimidating about that?" "Drive." "I'll drive if you take a few deep breaths for me. I'm not insured for third-party heart attacks, deal?" "Don't make me arrest you." I burst out laughing. "Oh, Scorchy, you're a treasure. I always forget why I'm so fond of you. We can arrest each other. How's that?" I pulled out into the traffic and went with the flow. "Now tell me, who have I been intimidating?" "Imelda Tierney and her daughters, as you well know. Miss Tierney says you tried to force your way into that flat yesterday, and she had to threaten you with a knife to get you to leave.
Imelda, is that who you're calling a girl?
She's 40-odd, Scorcher. Show some respect. The polite term these days is woman. And her daughters are girls. The youngest one is only 11. They say you've been sitting back there all afternoon, making obscene gestures at them.
I haven't had the pleasure of their acquaintance.
Are they nice girls? Or do they take after their mammy? What did I tell you the last time we saw each other? What was the one thing I told you to do?
Stay out of your way.
I got that part, loud and clear. What I missed was the part where you turned into my boss. Last time I looked, my boss was a lot heavier than you, and not nearly as good looking. I don't need to be your bloody boss to tell you to stay the hell out of my case. My investigation, Frank. My orders. You ignored them.
So report me. Do you need my ID number for that?
Yeah, Frank. Hilarious. I know the rules are one big bloody joke to you. I know you think you're immune. Hell, maybe you're right. I don't know how things work over in undercover.
Outrage didn't suit Scorcher. It swelled up his jaw to twice its normal size and gave him a forehead vein that looked dangerous.
But maybe you should keep in mind that I've been doing my best to do you a favor here, for Christ's sake. I've been going miles out of my way for you. And at this stage, I honestly can't remember why I'm bothering. If you keep on fucking me about every single bloody chance you get, I might just change my mind.
I stopped myself from slamming on the brakes and smacking his head off the windscreen.
Favor? You mean putting it about that Kevin was an accident?
Not just putting it about. It'll go on the death cert.
Oh, well then. Wow! I'm overwhelmed with gratitude, Scorch. Really, I am.
This isn't just about you, Frank. You may not give a damn whether your brother goes down as an accident or suicide, but I bet your family does.
Oh, no. No, don't even try to pull that one. When it comes to my family, pal, you don't have the tiniest clue what you're dealing with. For one thing, this may come as a shock, but you don't rule their universe. They'll all believe exactly what they want to believe, regardless of what you and Cooper put on the death cert. My mother, for example, would like me to inform you that it was, I shit you not, a traffic accident. For another, if most of my family were on fire, I wouldn't piss on them to put them out. I certainly don't give the world's smallest fuck what they think happened to Kevin.
Can a suicide go into consecrated ground these days?
What does the priest say in a suicide's homily? What does the rest of the neighborhood say about him? What does it do to the people who get left behind?
Don't fool yourself, Frank. You're not bloody immune to that.
My temper was starting to get a little ragged around the edges. I pulled into a narrow cul-de-sac between two blocks of flats, in reverse, so that I could make a quick getaway if I ended up shoving Scorcher out of the car, and switched off the ignition. Above us, some architect had got cute with blue-painted balconies, but the Mediterranean effect was undermined by the fact that they looked out on a brick wall and a clump of skips.
So, I said, Kevin gets filed away under accident, all nice and pretty.
Let me ask you this. What are you filing Rosie under?
Murder, obviously.
Obviously. Murder by who? Person or persons unknown?
Scorcher left a silence.
I said, or by Kevin.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that.
How complicated can it be?
If our suspect's dead, too, we've got a certain amount of discretion. It's a fine line. On the one hand, it's not like there's going to be an arrest, so the brass aren't wild about the idea of pumping resources into the case. On the other hand,
there's the almighty solve rate.
Mock all you want. These things matter. You think I'd have been able to give your girlfriend this much manpower if my solve rate had been in the toilet?
It's a cycle. The more I get out of this case, the more I can put into the next one.
Sorry, Frank, but I'm not going to jeopardize the next victim's shot at justice and my reputation just to spare your feelings.
Translate for me, Scorch. What exactly are you planning on doing about Rosie?
I'm planning on doing this right.
We'll keep collecting and collating evidence and witness statements for the next couple of days.
After that, assuming nothing unexpected turns up...
He shrugged.
I've worked a couple of these cases before.
Normally, we try to handle the situation